It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
It's three guys who combined to play 15 seasons in the National Football League trenches. Well, two guys. And Mackie, who didn't do shit. This is the O-Line Committee.
Anyone else just hearing this resonating in your sleep still from the weekend?
Dude, I don't. I'm glad. Dude, the draft's like Vegas. You spend 3 days in it and you get out and you don't go back for a year, dude.
Yep.
Like, day three of the draft is just pandemonium.
It's a lot.
As an agent, dude, it is. I've got all three of my PFA contracts spread out over there, reviewing them, going through them, like the whole bit. And it's a wild time. And I'm glad it's over. All four of my guys have homes. I had a sixth rounder. All the other three signed deals. They're on 90-man rosters. So great success there. But I'm glad it's over. I'm done for a year.
It's a lot. Hey, I will say this. They kept up with almost every pick on day three. Like, they started grouping them together. I like how they were doing. They were just kind of going through some dudes, talking about it.
Which one did you watch? There was like three. That's the other piece of it. Did you realize like there was like multiple
ESPN's.
Streams?
No, I watched ESPN. So I saw Mel.
You have to do
Mel Kiper. Dude, it was
Todd. Well, Todd's gone, dude. Todd's off the grip. He's like doing podcasts.
Todd's off the grip. Todd's kind of low key talking a little shit too. Did you see him talking about how he doesn't have a cell phone and stuff? And he's like, you gotta call the house, you gotta talk to the wife and all this stuff. And I was like, wow, putting his business out there.
But I mean, I tried doing the game day crew for a little bit and I just couldn't do it. Like Herb Street, trying to listen to Herb Street talk about the NFL. It's like Thursday night football. It's like, dude, stick to college. Go
play. Yeah, oh yeah. The voice alone.
He was talking about the Chargers and he was like, yeah, you know, that's gonna be a great pairing with Mike Williams. I was like, you idiot. He's not even there anymore.
It's gonna be great. Yeah. Philip Rivers. Like, yeah, what a great franchise.
Like, as soon as he said that, I was like,
Norv Turner, excellent head coach there in San Diego.
Hold on. There.
Can I mark something here? We are recording this podcast. It is 8:42 PM. Did you just crack a fresh monster?
I sure did. I told you bad things happen at night. Mackie knows. We used to do a little night segment all the time, and it was trouble.
But the difference is you're like on your fifth monster at when we would literally start at like 10 o'clock or 10:30 Central Time. I was on the West Coast, living in Seattle. I was like, take a nap so I can stay up the extra 2 hours. You're cracking another monster, just ready to be up all night.
Oh, dude, it's gonna be a great night. I'm so excited. The draft was phenomenal. I'm so much to talk about, and at the same time, it's dark. I feel like it's the 5:30 show still. Like, I just don't know what world I'm in right now. It's amazing.
Yeah, we used to do 5:30 in the morning recordings. Yep. We were kind of all over the place. Hey, a couple things before we get to the big boy question of the show, before we get to some mics. We're going to give you guys two episodes, kind of a part one, part two. We'll get to dumb football questions on part two. But I believe the night one, round one recap was the biggest episode in the history of O-Line Committee. So thank you guys.
That was
click
awesome.
That like button and the subscribe button on the YouTube channel if you haven't already. And over on the audio side on Apple and Spotify, it goes a long way. You can help the show by giving us a 5-star rating and a positive review as we come. We're like 1 month away from the 1 year anniversary of the launch of the show. We didn't know where it was going
to
take us, but you guys are an
close
awesome
to
audience. So,
so 20K. Close to 20. 20K so was close. The goal. I mean, yeah. It really wasn't the goal. We started this thing like, well, I don't know, someone.
Can we get like 10, 5? I don't know. Yeah.
I felt like it was therapy at first. Like, we all just started talking and rambling, and I need this in my life once a week. I'm just so excited, hyper.
Yeah, we love you guys. We appreciate you
so much.
So, before we get to the big boy question of the show here, a shout out to our friends at Aura. The O-Line Committee, we're all about what? Protection, protecting quarterbacks, and protecting our security on the internet, gentlemen, protecting listeners against data brokers. In fact, if you just Google your name, it can be a little unsettling. Your emails out there, your home address, pretty much like your life trail, your health record sometimes, your relatives. It's a little bit uncomfortable. And that's where Aura comes in, the sponsor of today's podcast. Aura shows you which data brokers are selling your information and automatically submits opt-out requests for you. In fact, AT&T recently revealed Over 73 million customer records, both existing and former customers, were released on the dark web. So Aura comes in and makes sure that you have strong passwords, monitors account activity, considers credit freezes or fraud alerts, and other things to keep you protected. Plus parental controls, which are great if you're trying to limit screen time or app usage for your kids. And Aura is extremely easy to set up, very affordable. You can help the show by signing up for a free trial, a two-week free trial at aura.com/O-Line Committee. That's aura.com, aura.com/O-Line Committee.
He's a concerned parent. That picture makes me laugh every time. I just think of Ned Flanders. Just so
Ned Flanders. That's
it from The Simpsons.
That's an aggressive comparison.
Oh, I love it. Here we go.
What do you got? Big boy question.
Okay, big boy question of the show here, gentlemen. Yeah, all right. I want to know, how do you guys feel about NFL draft grades?
They're so dumb.
The internet was littered with NFL draft grades.
You're talking about the fact that no one's done anything and they've already been graded?
Great. And even like beyond grades, just like, okay, the draft just ended and we've already made a judgment. We being like football fans, like we've made a judgment on who screwed up. Who did a great job before the rookie minicamps even start? Hey, how do we feel about this?
Scribes and pundits have told the experts, you fucked up. You should not have drafted that kid. I find this hilarious. And I always did when we played. They would always be laughing like, well, they said we lost. Said we're already screwed. I was like, everybody would just laugh because it's like, no, nothing's happened. But I think what they're trying to do is look around at the team and they're like, how well did they draft compared to what we think? And you just don't know what's going on behind the scenes. And I kind of go back to the whole Atlanta thing. Like, I feel like there's more behind the scenes that we don't know about. And there's stuff that we probably, maybe the rehab isn't going well, or maybe they don't see this as a long-term marriage. Maybe they literally see it as a two-year commitment and they're like, we're out. This is it. Maybe it's we just don't know.
Yeah.
And that's why, like, we give them a lot of shit for being like, whoa, what are you doing? But at the same time, it's kind of like, we're not in those rooms. We don't know what they're saying, and we don't know what Kirk's saying, like, hey, I'm not going to be ready till week eight. Or
we also don't know what teams' draft strategies are,
right?
And like, you know, I get a little bit more of a cleaner picture. Like, there's certain teams that literally tell us that after round three they just draft the best player available on the board,
right?
That's their whole strategy, right? Yeah. And so many of the talking heads are like, this team's needs are interior O-linemen and tight end. And then they draft a linebacker and they're like, well, they're not addressing any of their needs. It's like, no, well, they're drafting, like, their draft strategy is best.
What's going on with the Titans?
Yeah.
I'm not sure what's happening.
Yeah. It's like they draft, that's how their room is set up. That's how their draft strategy is set up. That's how their team is built. Or they have a guy on practice squad that they feel really good about that they think is going to take a jump this year and fill that need. Right. And then we base all of our judgment off of what we believe ESPN thinks teams' positions of needs are. And it's like, oh, you know, they didn't draft two tight ends in the sixth and the seventh. Better downgrade them from a B to a C minus. Like, it drives me bananas, dude. I can't
stand it. It's the best. Dude, you know you love it. And honestly, yeah, they kept showing. I don't know. I was watching the ESPN one, I guess. And by the way, I still stand by my resolve that Atlanta screwed that whole pickup. But I go back to the Mel Kiper when they were talking about, did you see him keep going back to the Colts when the Colts GM called him out? And
back,
he was like,
in the
I don't know
80,
who the hell
90s.
This Mel Kiper is. They show Mel back there just laughing. But you know how many times that happens in the group? Like, they're probably just back there listening to people talk so much shit about him. And they're like, well, now who the hell is this guy?
Yeah.
Like, what's he doing? Who is she? Who's he? Like, all these people just, they have to be like, dude, turn it off. Turn it off.
And we're basing grades off of like media big boards or they have what's called consensus big boards. There's a couple websites. There's like a mock draft database where they take everyone who does a big board on the internet and they put together like the average ranking of every player. But that might be wildly different than what the Buffalo Bills front office has on a whiteboard in their war room, right?
Or what they know about somebody or what they don't want to deal with somebody. I mean, medical. Dude, like. Hey, I'll tell you what, I'm going to jump into one of my mics already, and this is thanks to Shefty, but the whole Spencer Rattler dropping that many rounds because of that Netflix series was huge, dude, and I think it was eye-opening for a lot of people, and I'm not saying that I know anything about quarterbacks or that I'm a GM, but when you have Adam Schefter coming out and saying that this dude dropped 50, 75 picks because of a show he did in high school.
50, 75, dude, hundreds.
Okay, 100.
What? Yeah, what round?
100. We'll say 100. He went 150. So we'll say he dropped 100 picks. But like, that was eye opening, dude. And that was one of these, like, you just don't know what's being said behind closed doors and how teams evaluate you. And because some of, you know, now they're coming out and you see all these old GMs are like, oh, I wouldn't have cared. It's like, well, apparently everybody in the fucking league cared. So it must have been something big that everyone's talking about that we didn't realize. Because going in, nobody was like, oh, his draft stock's going to get killed from this high school show he did. But now everyone's like, I bet you feel pretty stupid, well, don't you?
There's also this dichotomy that happens. And, you know, this happens in the league where when a guy
that's a fine for that's a ding. Know, trying Thank to act you. Smart. I don't know.
Thank you. Okay, that's an Eddie Haskell fine. Go ahead.
So sensitive. As guys start to fall in the draft, I think that the league starts looking at him like, well, why isn't everyone else picking him? Right. And they may have him higher on their board and they may be like, well, I thought we have him as a third rounder. Why is he still here in the fifth? Right. Well, maybe we shouldn't take him. Maybe something else knows something that we don't.
It's like the movie Draft Day, literally.
Yeah, that does happen to an extent. You know, if the player is good enough, then they'll go overdo it. But once you get past the top three rounds, it's really a crapshoot of why a team doesn't pick a certain person. And I also think that, you know, when you look at it more of a thousand eye view, there's so many players that have quote unquote draftable grades going into this.
Yeah.
Right. Like that, if you're sitting there, like we said, we don't see the big board room, but if one team has a second round grade on a player and you talk, and like me as the agent, right, I talk to their team and they're like, oh yeah, we have your player as a third to fourth, right? And like, oh sweet. So we're looking at it like, okay, in the third or fourth round, it's a potential to take my player. But what we don't know is that they have a player that might be rated on their board as a first or a second round that's still sitting there.
Yeah.
And they're like, well, I'm going to take that dude because we had him as a second round pick. And
now we valued him more.
Like, I think it's just a safe thing for players to think and for people to know, like, if a guy is rated a certain round, just drop him one. And that's more of the idea of where people go outside of the top two rounds. Like, outside of the top, because there's a lot of teams that took first-round talent in the second round this year.
I agree with that.
With all the defensive players, like a lot of those dudes probably had first-round grades.
They all dropped to the second.
And they all dropped to the second just because of where people fell. Right. And that's another piece of the draft. And that's why when anyone tries to tell you that they can predict the draft, it's impossible. It's impossible. It's the most inexact science of anything out there to try and predict just because there's so many moving integral parts to it. It's fun. It's crazy. But it is absolutely the Wild West.
Dude, it is so fun, though, to watch. And it's fun to watch them try and pull their books out fast enough to get the bios on the kid and be like, I watched this kid back. You're like, dude, come on, keep flipping. It's the best. Those books are literally like the first playbook I got in the NFL. They're like this big. You're like, just see him flipping through all these names. You're like, oh, this guy's got it. And then I wonder, how much of that film did he watch?
I'll tell you, these scouts watch a lot of film, dude. These scouts do watch a lot of film. The good ones.
There you go.
The good ones watch a lot of tape. Right. And you can tell when you're talking to a good scout. When one of my favorite things to do when I'm talking to a player or I'm talking to a scout about one of my players is I start to ping him about other players that are in his general grade area. Right. Like, hey, yeah, my O-lineman. Oh, yeah, we have him as a fourth to fifth. Okay. Well, what do you think about this player from Kentucky? Oh, yeah, I like him too. Right. You just start kind of feeling like, okay, where do you know, or how in depth are you, or do I need to go above you one more, or those type of things? Like you just kind of got to feel your way out through some of these guys. Cause yeah, there's some that are lower level assistants, or there's some that are scouting coordinators, scouting directors, or a true area scout, or, you know, all the things kind of play a role into that. And then they bring the pro personnel guys in at the last minute, right? The pro personnel scouts and the pro scouts are always out there doing their thing at the last minute. They'll be like, hey, I know you're the pro scout, but I need you to come handle the defensive lineman PFAs. And so you'll get like random calls from a pro scout. You're like, John? He's like, yeah, I'm doing all IPAs. He's like, okay, I thought you're talking about one of my guys in the league. Like guys you talk with back and forth. It's just, it's such
what,
a mess.
Hey, what do, I love on draft weekend, who's in the war room for each team? Like, have you guys ever, what have you ever been in a war room either before a draft or
they lock that thing locking?
No, it's pretty locked up. Well, I will say the Vikings, I was in the Vikings one when I came in here. Remember the with the long table in the middle and they had all the names on the board. But for the most part, it's the owner, the head coach, the GM, the assistant GM, a lot of the scouts. And then as you look around, head trainer.
He's the one that like they'll look to and be like medical, and he flips the book and goes, shakes his no head. Or yes.
Hey, right?
Like,
he's this guy.
Yeah, he's.
And then I saw a couple. There were some war rooms with some coaches in it. So like some positional coaches, but for the most part, it's just kind of those guys. It's not really anybody else, but
my favorite was the, did you watch the Eagles where every time they made a pick, they opened the door and like ushered a bunch of people in and then they'd all be like,
nice job, everyone. Nice.
Work. Dude, I can't stand that, by the way. I can't stand the clap after every pick. It's like,
what do you mean?
There were some of them that were selling it really hard. It's like, really hard. Like they, you know, they knew they were on camera and they were 100%. Like going crazy.
You know, like the guy turned around and was like, all right, smile for the cameras. Yeah. And then like as soon as the cameras are off, like back to your shanties. Right? Like, we'll call you back when we get another pick.
You know what we need? We need, and maybe someone's done this on YouTube. We need a highlight reel of all of the most embarrassing in retrospect, right? We go take a look at the Cleveland Browns war room. Everyone congratulating each other on Johnny Manziel. Oh, this is great. Big hugs. Justin Blackmon to the Jaguars. We got our guy. Oh, big hugs.
Well, that's like that's what you wonder about too, like especially in the first round where like how excited were they got that guy, or are they super pissed that they didn't get the guy that was one pick ahead of them?
Yeah.
Right? Like I think about that for like even with Atlanta or anyone that's taken a quarterback and they call and they'd be like, hey man, sorry you had to wait. We just had to wait for you to get here. It's like, did you? Or were you just happy he was like the last man standing?
Like were the Vikings about to take Michael Penix?
Right.
And they were ready to celebrate. And
out of nowhere, just slipped right from him.
And then they'd be like, sorry, JJ, we knew you'd be there, man. It's like, did you? Like,
just had to follow the process,
scale
man.
Scale of 1 to 10, how actually happy are
you? Heard you wanted to trade up to 3, actually. But that's not what I heard.
It's like, all the reports come out like, dude, they're trying to sell the farm to get to
3. That's what we heard.
We were trying to do it for you, JJ.
It was all you, dude. Yeah. But then we knew you'd be here at 11, so we were fine.
By the way, I took the liberty. I did a couple Google searches here in the spirit of NFL draft grades.
Did you use Aura to protect you?
Please, God.
I did. That's aura.com/O-line committee. Sign up for your free 2-week trial. No, I thought it'd be fun to pull a couple of old immediate reactions to previous drafts here. So this is Bleacher Report graded the 2012 NFL draft, and they circled the Seahawks. Okay, they went to the Seahawks.
Was that Kuechly's year?
I think he was before 12, wasn't he? Kuechly? He was Panthers, wasn't he?
Yeah.
So who was Seahawks in 12?
So the Seahawks in round one took Bruce Irvin from West Virginia, who I believe is still playing, like going into his 13th season in the NFL.
I think last year might have been his last year.
Yeah, that was 2012.
Second round, Bobby Wagner out of Utah State.
Murdered it.
And then the third round, they took Russell Wilson, quarterback out of Wisconsin. Let's see what Bleacher Report had to say the day after the Seahawks 2012 draft.
This is going to be great.
Grade D for the Seahawks. The writer says the Seahawks received our lowest grade for their reach of Bruce Irvin at 15 overall. Then they messed up again in round 3 with the Russell Wilson pick after having already signed Matt Flynn to be their quarterback this offseason. Neither of these picks makes much sense to us.
Hold on. Where'd he come from, Alex?
The Packers.
You said Packers, but anyways.
Packers.
Dude, didn't Matt Flynn throw for like 6 touchdowns against the Lions?
It was like that one game. Everybody was like, By the way, when he got there, he didn't even start a game in Seattle. You remember that? Russell beat him out in like the preseason.
Yeah.
And then he ended up starting. Like, it was insane, dude.
It's pretty wild. Okay, let's see what the Ringer had to say about the 2018 draft here. 2018 draft. It's a good one.
For who?
The Arizona Cardinals.
All right.
Specifically, this is a first round grade here. Josh Rosen, quarterback, UCLA to the Arizona Cardinals. And they graded 2 categories, fit, A. Value, A+. And here's the
baby.
Josh Rosen is the most polished passer in this quarterback class. A quarterback class that included, let's see here, Lamar Jackson, Josh Allen, Baker Mayfield.
Sam Darnold.
The most polished passer in this quarterback class, advanced in his footwork, throwing mechanics, and understanding of coverages. When he's forced to move off his spot to throw, things often break down, but when he drops back and throws on time, it's a thing of beauty. Josh Rosen, A+. So excited to dive into those 2024 draft grades here, boys.
I love that. You totally went back at those guys before that. I love that.
That's fantastic, Mac.
Because you know that game like the day after the draft.
It did literally like
you are terrible. Pete Carroll's probably like, okay.
Bobby Wagner.
Right?
Loser. Okay, let's do some more mics here. Jay, who's your mic?
I'm gonna mic and I may get some shit for this. I'm going to backpedal a little bit on the Falcons pick at 8.
Oh, here we go.
I think Atlanta did this in an order to do what the Vikings could never do, which was have contractual leverage against Kirk Cousins, right? To say, because really that deal, so that's a $180 million deal, right? 100 of it's guaranteed. So that's really, you're looking at his guaranteed money is through two seasons,
mm-hmm.
right? And what did the Vikings never be able to do for Kirk Cousins? Mike McCarthy, love him. A lot of respect for him as an agent.
McCartney.
Every time that Kirk wanted more money out of the Vikings, all he had to do was twist the Vikings' balls and pull and say, I want more money. Because he had him in a vice. There was no other option. Right? There was no other option.
All due respect, not to crap on Sean Mannion, but like Sean Mannion was the main backup for...
Correct.
Yeah.
Three Correct. Or four seasons.
So. And so now I think that they saw what happened in Minnesota. They saw the way that whole thing played out with Kirk and how it hamstrung the team at times. And they were like, you know what? Let's get a quarterback in here so that in 2 years we can have some leverage against Kirk coming back to us and saying, I want more guaranteed or I want more of this. I've been trying to think about the strategy ever since we sat there.
So dumb.
This is the best you could come up with.
The logic is when he's 38 years old and even less mobile than he already is coming off an Achilles, that and they may or may not want to re-sign him or restructure his contract in a couple of years, Michael Penix instead of Sean Mannion gives them a little bit more leverage.
Well, yeah, you could cut him in 2 years and have something
ready to go.
But here's my question.
Because you don't plan on picking there again, right? If Kirk is who he is, you're not picking late first, you hope, right? Even if you're talking about a better season, right?
Mackie
and I've talked about, you're saying now you're a 10 to 12 win team. Maybe you put it all together, you're a 13, 14 win team. You go into the playoffs, win a couple. You're not going to be in the position that they were in this year to pick a quarterback, right, up high. And so you're saying, okay, Kirk's going to elevate our team. He's going to bring us to where we need to be. But if we don't want to find ourselves picking in the top 10 again, we're not going to be able to pay another good quarterback to come in here to be the backup that we'd have trust in. Let's develop a guy for 2 years. And then when the time comes, we feel really good about our option and we can tell Kirk, hey, we're not giving you any more money. Instead of looking around the league going, I don't know what we do because we find ourselves in this terrible position that the Vikings have found themselves in for years. I kind of understand it a little bit when I look through it through that lens.
I don't know, man.
Question.
I get what you're saying.
You understand what I'm trying to say, though.
Totally get what you're saying, and that's why I kind of brought it up. Like, in 2 years, he's gone, and we bring this dude in. But at the same time, if I will backtrack on what I said, if they are not picking next year in the top 15, if they're picking in the top 15 next year, then that was a stupid pick all the live long day because you could have just went on.
They're not going to. I'm saying
if they are, then I'm not going to backtrack what I said. But if they are picking, like, 22, then I'll go, yeah, hey, great pick. Now you can go out and get him another weapon. You got really good. Let's see what happens in another year, and then you can cut him. But, dude, there's so many days in between now and then. So many things can happen. You could have added another great weapon to your defense.
I thought about it a little bit more.
I know. I'm just saying sometimes they're reinventing this wheel, and you're like, dude, it ain't that hard.
Contractual leverage is something Kirk Cousins has never had to deal with.
If it's really gotten to that mental game of contractual leverage, then,
dude,
Kirk, you officially win GOAT of the year. That they are like, we had to draft a quarterback in the top 10 to prove to you that you don't run this goddamn team. We do. Yeah. Like, you could have just came downstairs and been like, hey, you pull any of that funny shit with us, we'll smack you around a little bit, okay? This is Atlanta. So that guy upstairs, Arthur, you don't fuck around.
He fleeced them so aggressively 6 weeks ago that instead of spending six weeks, we got you. All right, let's figure out how to flank Kirk with weapons. They're like, no, we got to figure out how to win the next contract negotiation with this guy.
It's literally become the new Aaron Rodgers Green Bay. It's like the mental warfare games back and forth now. Kirk's going to play this silent game, and they're going to be like, they're still technically holding the last card, so they're above him right now. We'll see what happens.
I can see why they did it a little bit clearer now versus my emotional gut reaction. I don't know. It's just curious to me. Like, there was a reason. There was a reason. What is it? We may never know. But that's starting to make a lot more sense to me as to why they did it.
Until the quarterback room completely goes kaboomy and the team just goes,
but that's the thing. A couple things on this. There's a human element here. And Booney's kind of joking, but like, Kirk is rehabbing all throughout the offseason program. He's not going to be full speed at OTAs or minicamps. And Michael Penix is going to be out there bonding with his teammates, throwing darts all over the place. Dude, working on Tuesdays. It's going to be great.
That's another thing. Oh, why'd you have to go there, dude? We haven't talked about the not working on Tuesdays. This rookie's going to force his ass in there. He's going to be like, Kirk, where you at, bud?
But like from a roster building standpoint, there's a finite amount of cap space, a finite amount of draft picks. I get what Jay is saying. You're trying to, and you know, and people use the Packers example. I would argue, well, the Packers were a 13-win team already before that draft, and Aaron Rodgers had like 1 year left on his contract. He's kind of in and out in terms of whether he was going to resign. I think it's a different situation. I think if you're going to commit to Kirk Cousins on that level, you should be drafting a wide receiver or a defensive player to just go all in for the next 2 or 3 years. Just like if you're going to draft Michael Penix because you love him, well, you should plan ahead with a cheaper bridge quarterback that's not going to basically derail Michael Penix's rookie scale contract. Like, part of the value of a rookie quarterback is he doesn't make any money. But if that quarterback room is going to be making $60 million because Kirk Cousins is taking up 90% of it, I get what you're saying, but I still don't.
Yeah, no, we totally understand what you're saying. We're just saying from like a money standpoint, and I'm saying from a more like a room standpoint and a team building standpoint. You're right, Mackie. Say Kirk isn't out there for all of OTAs, and you got this young rookie running around dazzling dudes, and I mean
Russell Wilson,
really, really pretty. It's going to be hard to go back to the team and go, da-da, that's the future. Let's look now. This, dude, it's going to be really, really hard.
Bring out the white bread.
Right?
Sorry, not to belabor. I know we bring Kirk up a lot, but it's just something that's been on my mind thinking about.
It's like the biggest story of the week. What I know it is. But everyone's like, backtracking now, which is funny to me.
I'm not
like,
backtracking, though. Like,
well, you are. You're like, well, you know, I see the contractual labors of all this.
If you really see it from their point of view, guys.
The business side of it.
Speaking, he only plays.
Just saying.
You see, guys.
I can't stand the Crusaders anymore. They're coming for me. All right.
Shit.
Booty, what do you got?
Yeah, go ahead, Booty. You go first.
I already gave you mine.
Okay. Let me give you guys one. Okay.
Fine.
I'm going to try and share something on the screen here. I have another if I can make this happen.
Oh, I love when you share screen.
Okay, hold on a second. It's going to look wonky at first, but stick with me. Okay, can you guys see this right here? My mic for the YouTube audience.
I'm so glad you brought this up.
My mic is Tony Khan, the son of Shotgun.
Did you read about why he's in that?
Okay, did I read about it? I may have watched live when it happened on AEW Dynamite a week and a half ago.
I read about it. I had to look into it.
Dude, this is wild. I'm going to explain this to the non-wrestling nerd audience. Okay, you guys know I'm a professional wrestling fan. I'm a geek. And so there's the WWE, and then there's the secondary company, which is pretty big. They have like a TNT and TBS deal. It's AEW, and it's owned by the Khan family, which owns the Jacksonville Jaguars. Tony Khan, the billionaire son of Shad Khan, runs and writes and directs wrestling for AEW. He's the boss man. And the bad guy faction turned on the boss 2 Wednesdays ago and gave him a pile driver in the middle of the ring to end AEW Dynamite. Oh, my God. They just took out the boss. What's going to happen next? Well, this was a day before the NFL draft. So in order to keep up the storyline, Tony Khan in the war room for the Jacksonville Jaguars and on multiple interviews with NFL Network, etc., wore a neck brace the entire weekend.
Dude is the best. The best. I saw him. Hey, I saw it first when Trent Baalke looked over at him and he asked him a question. He was like looking at this massive piece of paper, and you could see that Trent was like getting frustrated. And then I was like, why is he wearing a neck brace? And then I started doing a bunch of research, and I was deep in it, boys, deep in it. That's incredible. Hilarious. And I love that he sold it all the way through the NFL draft, like sold the shit out of it.
Like Saturday was over and he ripped it off. He's like,
oh my God.
I'm so free.
Oh, my God. I can't imagine how hot and scratchy that is. God, thinking about that makes me
Did you see the video of Chris Ballard calling the defensive lineman and he thought it was a prank call? Like
D lineman thought it was a prank call?
Yeah, so there was a video, I think, Ballard from the Patriots was calling his draft pick, right? And he calls it, and the guy answers. He's like, hello? He's like, hey, man, how's it going? He's like, this is the Colts. We're getting ready to draft. And he goes, is this a prank call? And you see Ballard starts laughing. Like, Ballard's like, no, it's not a prank call. Like, he thought one of his buddies was calling and pranking him on draft day. I was like, that's incredible.
It's become so much. I love
it. Well, I mean, I love that they're filming those now because I think they're hilarious. Like, it goes all the way back to Kenneth Walker's when they couldn't get him on the phone and the panic that was setting in with Snyder up there. They're like, he's not answering his phone.
If he doesn't answer, you can still draft him. If
you
he doesn't
still draft
answer his phone,
but they're like, we're gonna draft this kid. He's not gonna answer his phone. And like someone text him. Like, who's his agent? Like, they're just like panicking. Like, call the backup number. Like, and she's like, that's going to voicemail too. Like, and I know the scout. I know the scout that's on there, Kirk Parrish, and he's it's exactly. He's like, they're like, he's flipping through that giant binder booty. Like you're talking about, he just cracks it open. He's like searching for the backup number. Like, oh my gosh, I think it's so funny when the panic sets
in. Dude, I would be all about that. That's a great mic, by the way.
Awesome. Nice.
All right, listen. Do it. I got another mic.
Go.
I'm sad to say, it's a changing of the guard. It looks like Kelsey is coming to Monday Night Football. Matt Ryan will be joining CBS, and Boomer Esiason and Phil Simms are out.
Yes,
dude. It's going to be interesting. And Tom's going to where now? Tom's going to Fox. Dude, it's about to be a fucking overhaul. It's about to be injected in my goddamn veins. I'm ready to roll, bro.
Okay, let's dive into this. So,
do it.
Yeah, this is the order of the new broadcast. And by the way, I think like Fox at some point, like you said, Tom Brady, we're trying to figure it out. So, Jason Kelsey joining ESPN's Monday Night Countdown, RG3 out, one year and done on that show. So, Jason Kelsey joins Scott Van Pelt, Ryan Clark, and Marcus Spears. I don't know if they're going to, sometimes they have five, I feel like, on the countdown.
Isn't Randy still on that?
And Randy, Randy does.
Randy's on that. Yeah.
Yep.
Like, you got mossed. He'll be on. You got mossed. Can't get away with the segment.
Hell yeah, man. You got mossed.
And then you mentioned the CBS. So, NFL Today, Phil Simms, Boomer Esiason out. So, the 80s quarterbacks are out.
Yeah, dude. That's sad.
And we're bringing the 2000s quarterback, Matt Ryan, in. And then J.J. Watt is going to be full-time now. Whoa. So, Matt Ryan, J.J. Watt join James Brown, Nate Burleson, and Bill Cowher is sticking around. OG
dude, Bill Cowher, man. I want to meet him so bad. I feel like he's such a badass. I'm not kidding.
Remember, he was supposed to maybe do that job for like a year or two and then just jump back into coaching. He just never jumped back into coaching.
Good for him, dude.
20 years.
So what's happening with Greg Olson? Is Greg Olson getting the boot?
It's still up in the air.
Well, wait, is Tom going to the booth or is he going to the set?
Booth.
No one knows yet.
Oh, he's supposed to be going to the booth. That's right, because Greg's getting the boot, by the way. Played with Greg. Great dude.
I thought Greg did a great job last year.
Loved
like,
him.
I thought he should be elevated to like top tier games. Like, dude, I thought he did phenomenal.
He was awesome. And he's a great teammate too, dude. Like, I played with him in Seattle.
I did too. I played with him in Panthers.
Awesome guy. I mean, one of the coolest, nicest, toughest motherfuckers there is. And then to see him in the booth, like having a lot of fun, was really cool.
Yeah. I'll be sad if he gets the boot.
Yeah, they've got to figure out. Like, Tom Brady doesn't feel fully committed to this. It's been
he just broke down.
He signed that contract, and
they just did a thing with him where he broke down some plays from last year, and dude, he sounded really good. Like,
well, so you think he's going to be? A
you
stud.
Know, he's going to be good. He I just sounded. Feel bad, like, because even Greg could be phenomenal. Greg could be better than Tom. You're still getting the boot. Like, Tom Brady, Tom Brady's one of very few like people on this earth that can walk in and be like, I'm taking your job.
I want to do this.
Be one of the best. And they'd be like,
get up,
lead.
Get up.
It's not your seat anymore. Move. Right. Like, throwing shit in a box. Like, go. Like, it's sad for Greg, but like, it's 100% what's going
to
happen.
You guys ever do that to me, I'll kill you.
Oh, sorry, Booney.
Yeah. Hey, Booney. Oh, sorry. We got someone else coming here. You just slowly exit him off of the screen. Like, he just, and goodbye.
Terrible, dude. I feel terrible.
Let's make a list of
like
current
that.
NFL offensive linemen that if they retire, we are replacing Alex Boone out of the line committee. Let's do it.
You guys are dicks.
I mean, Frank Ragnow is pretty entertaining. Frank Ragnow is pretty good.
Easy.
Frank's a good one. Gosh, I'm trying to think. There's some characters out there, dude.
Lane Johnson for sure, right?
He doesn't have much of a personality. He's just kind of like,
hey, who's the Chargers dude? Who is the one of the funniest dudes?
Rashawn Slater?
No,
Ornberger.
Ornberger. Rich Ornberger.
He does radio. Doesn't he do radio in San Diego somewhere?
Dude,
I'm gonna get him on as a guest because Richie.
So funny.
Dude, Richie used to do a bit, and I think I might have told you guys this, where every year during training camp, he would write letters to home from the rookies, and then he'd make the rookie get up there and read it. And like, dude, they were hysterical.
We heard about these.
Our coach would be in the back of the room, like dying laughing because he knew everyone, and so he'd make it sound like them. But he'd just be like, "Mom, Coach D's so mean to me," and like he would just go on and on and make it personal. And he's like, "I'm just eating Del Taco twice a week." Like, dude, it was. He could be a stand-up comedian.
Yeah, dude,
we're gonna get him on the show for sure.
Gotta get him on.
Yeah.
By the way, shout out to Ryan Wendell. Saw that he's the O-line coach down in LA. Super excited about that. Loved him too. Was on the PA with him. Great dude.
Yep.
We should pull the audience in the comments too. We're putting together for like off season between now and training camp. We will have our recording schedule is a little bit at a more normal time than 5 a.m. So give us offensive linemen would be great. We could dabble in some quarterbacks, but I think it's O-line committee. So let's get fun, either current or former offensive linemen that you guys want to hear from. Phil Dodeholtz on the list.
Yeah.
Ornberger. I threw out Frank Ragnow to you guys just behind the scenes. I think that'd be fun. So like,
you know who I want to get on really
ideas
bad?
In the comments.
Penei.
Yeah.
So bad.
Yeah.
I want to get him on and I want to just start talking to him and I want to hear about Campbell.
You're gonna get Joe Alt on after.
I'll get Joe on for sure.
I want to hear it
in the summer
about it.
Yeah. We'll get Joe on and he can tell you guys some stories. We got a lot of dudes who can tell some stories. We got CB. Yeah. We got to get CB on down in Cincinnati. Yeah. That's gonna
be
great.
We'll get some dudes on.
Hey, I want to keep the broadcast conversation going here because
what do you got?
So CBS is this is like a huge move. Phil Simms, Boomer Esiason.
I know they've been there
these
forever.
Are like faces of the 80s and early 90s NFL, and they've been on CBS for 25, 30 years. And so they're getting younger with Matt Ryan, J.J. Watt. Nate Burleson's been around for a little bit, but he's a little bit younger, right? And then ESPN, I mean, they move. I feel like every year they're shuffling guys out. But Jason Kelsey just retired. Ryan Clark is a young face who's been on the rise. And then you look at Fox NFL Sunday, and it has been – Terry Bradshaw since 1994.
Oh, yeah.
Howie Long since 1994. Jimmy Johnson since like 2000
right?
or something.
Yeah.
Or 99.
Jimmy's face is permanently stuck like this.
Yeah.
Like he's just
wait,
like
tell us something, guys.
You just see Sunday morning Botox right into the cheeks.
Oh, for sure.
Like when he just doesn't move. It's hard to see.
And then you think, but they got Michael Strahan. Dude, Strahan's been on that show for like 16 years now, and he's the young guy.
Duh.
So what do we need to do with Fox and NFL Sunday? Is there
I'm
going to
say this. If they ever get rid of Howie Long, I will never watch it again because I love Howie Long. I love how serious he is. He looks like he still scares everybody on that show. He talks, and they're all like, shut up, Howie. Like everything about him, and he just still looks like he could go out there and put a helmet on and fuck somebody up. Like I am all about the Fox pregame show. Seriously,
how old is
Bradshaw? Maybe getting a little bit out there.
A little bit.
I could probably lose him. I love Terry.
I feel like Terry Bradshaw reminds me a little bit of Lee Corso, where maybe we can just designate like a fun bit for him. Like Lee Corso comes out a couple times on Saturday, does the headgear thing.
Yeah.
And then they got younger guys.
If they got rid of Jimmy, I wouldn't be upset. But you got to keep Strahan and you got to keep Howie for sure.
Well, okay. Well, let me ask you guys this. Who do you watch? Like who's...
I watch that.
You watch Fox?
I watch Fox. Yeah.
Who do you watch, Mac?
I watch Fox more because they usually have Vikings games.
And I just throw it on.
But
who else I watch too is the NFL Network.
I will say those guys are great too.
And that's goes because you know why those dudes are former players and they're former coaches that are like
The chimes. Yeah.
Like those guys, you can tell they do all their homework. You can tell that they've been watching film. You can tell that they're into it. They're very like, but they like to have a good time too. And dude, Mooch, I'm a huge Mooch fan. Like coming from the Niners, obviously he was out there coaching. I love him to death. Kurt Warner, great. But dude, Fox and NFL Network are the two best in my opinion. But maybe CBS saw that and was like, "Hey,
well,
start switching."
Gronk's on Fox, right?
Is he?
He's not full time.
No,
He's there for like a bolt of energy once. Dude,
remember
while,
when last year they brought on they had Tony? Didn't they have Tony and Mike Vick too for a while?
So they have like a pre-show to the they have a 10 a.m. Yeah. to 11 a.m. show Central Time.
There's like 25
That's like
shows
the backup
on
squad. It's isn't it like Mark? Well, Mark Sanchez is a color commentator, but it's like Michael Vick. I can't remember the other players on that show, but yeah, we just need just a
little
bit.
Well, then I'm starting to think about like Thursday night's lineup, and that one's pretty good.
What
Richard
about Philip,
Sherman?
Philip Rivers in place of Terry Bradshaw.
Dude, Philip would be great, but he's got too many kids. He's got too many kids, dude. Philip,
we can't borrow you for 6 hours.
But it's in LA. It's in LA. The studio.
He doesn't live in LA. I think he moved back to Alabama. I think he just shipped the whole kids and the kit and caboodle. He's coaching his high school. His son's gonna go to college soon. Like,
good for him.
I think he just had another one too.
Jesus.
Up to 10?
I think he's up to 10 now.
10.
10. That's what I mean. He ain't going. He's kind of jealous.
I'm not going to lie. Yeah. 10 kids.
Once you get close to fielding a full
about
side
four.
Of the ball.
Listen, we went to the gala the other day. Listen, no. We went to the gala the other day, and this lady brought her baby. And I was kind of like, dude, I could do another kid. I could do it.
And then your wife looked at you like, okay, idiot.
No, she looked at me too like, yo, we could do another one. We could do another one.
Stop.
For sure.
Stop it.
I know, right? Trouble.
Stop it. You could be a donor, and there could be a little rhino running around somewhere else.
Easy, Mac.
Oh, man. The other thing broadcast-wise, Bill Belichick and Nick Saban were huge parts of ESPN's draft coverage over the weekend. So Saban was, like, on the panel. Was it the game day panel or the other one? I can't remember. I think
no, it was McAfee's, wasn't it? And it's only a matter of time before
Belichick was on McAfee's all weekend, or at least one of the nights.
Saban and it's only a matter of time before McAfee gets his own pregame show, and that one's going to be hilarious. That'll probably be the one that I watch. Like, it's only a matter of time before he gets his, and it'll be Belichick. I wouldn't be surprised if he got Saban on there, too. Like, dude.
How much more can McAfee... So McAfee's doing his own, you know, four hours a day, Monday through Friday. Then he's doing College Game Day on Saturdays. He's also the Monday Night Raw commentator.
I don't think he's back on Game Day this year. I think they kicked him off.
I mean, he did the whole season.
No, I know.
He stepped down and was like, I don't want to do this.
No, one of the last games of the year, he said something about like some of the higher-ups were whining about him and the whole bit, and so he was stepping away from it.
The ratings took a little bit of a dip.
Yep, the ratings took a little bit because they were like, he's too much, and he's this, and he's that. So I think he's off Game Day this year. He's fantastic.
Oh,
but you
got to
remember, Game Day is still – I think Game Day is dying. I don't think College Game Day is the number one college football pregame show anymore.
Oh, his Fox kind of.
I think Big Noon Kickoff has taken over a little bit, like with Brady Quinn and that crew, like because I think people are kind of tired of seeing the Kirk Herbstreets and that whole crew, Desmond. Like I think people want new blood in there, and Pat. They thought Pat was going to be it, but then all the old heads were like, "No, I don't want Pat." Right, and I think that there's a fight there. I like Big Noon Kickoff.
I have a Desmond Howard story.
Oh, let's go.
Oh, here we go.
Go for it. Let's go. Come on.
Okay, we'll tell it.
Do it. We all say things we don't want to say. Say it. Oh, we're for sure getting canceled.
Do it, Mac. Look at him squirming.
It's not that bad. You're getting nervous. Oh, yeah.
It's not even a bad story. I just feel like... Who the hell am I to like rip on these wildly successful athletes and national commentators? But so you know how sometimes you have an idea about don't never meet your heroes, right? Mm-hmm. They say that. Not that Desmond Howard was like a hero of mine. My grandpa played at Notre Dame. I'm a Notre Dame guy. He's a Michigan guy. But he was doing ESPN stuff, and we were at the time an ESPN affiliated radio station, ESPN Twin Cities, and they offered him up. Leading into, it was like 2012 when Manti Te'o was up for a Heisman.
Yes.
It was Manti Te'o and his catfish girlfriend.
Yep.
And then I can't remember who won the Heisman.
We're all laughing.
Do you guys remember that story?
Are you kidding me?
I played with him the next year.
Oh, with the Chargers.
I was with him in San Diego.
Time out. I remember hearing that, and I was in the lunchroom, and they were like, this can't be fucking real. Like, there's no way this guy's coming into our league. And they were like, yeah, dude, I hope we draft him. Like, everybody just wanted to fuck with him so bad. But you got to tell me, what was it like day one? Please tell me that everybody was just like, oh, hey, buddy, how you doing?
Well, I came in his second year, but I want to wait. I want Mackie to finish the story first.
Okay, it's not going to live up to it. So here's what happened, all right? So we get offered up Desmond Howard. And it's Desmond Howard, and it's brought to you by some sponsor. So we're going to pimp this thing that he's promoting. And the publicist gave, and I hate when they do this, but gave a list of like, here's five topics that he's like prepped on, five questions. You can throw to him, and he's ready to rock on these. I'm like, okay, I'd rather just ask my own questions, but whatever. Fair. Like, we'll make it a fun interview, and I'll start with a couple things. Like, I'll just lead with the one on his list.
Some softballs.
We'll go And so, so the first, by the way, Johnny Manziel won the Heisman that year. So that's what it was. It was Johnny Manziel and Manti Te'o were like, who's going to win it? And so I said, I'm literally reading off the cheat sheet that his publicist gave for the first. This is supposed to be a 12-minute interview. And I said, you know, welcome in Desmond Howard here to whatever the show was called at the time. So, man, Manti Te'o could become the first defensive player in a long time to win a Heisman Trophy. How do you handicap the race between Manti Te'o and Johnny Manziel? Total softball, right? Silence for like 3 or 4 seconds. And he goes, man, what are you talking about? And I said, Manti Te'o has it. I just kind of repeated the question. He goes, a defensive player ain't going to win the Heisman Trophy. Like, what do you like? He basically said, like, that's a stupid ass question. Like, what else? What else? What other questions do you have? And I was like, what are you? I was like, I'm literally reading off the sheet that you gave me, guy.
You
like,
gave me this it. Number one says.
He checked out the minute that first question. He thought that I was an idiot for asking about a defensive player winning the Heisman. And it wound up being like a 4-minute interview, the most disappointing interview I can
remember. Oh, no.
Dude, sorry. Thanks.
He probably was so sharp with you after that. Like, for some reason, you probably pissed him off, which is terrible because I agree with you. I hate when you come in and they're like, ask him these questions only. And you're like, well, that sucks. I had other questions I wanted to ask him. And they're like, don't ever get off script. You're like, okay. Well, dude,
that's how I was. So when I was doing the sideline reporting for the Huskers in 21, when I got the job, they're like, listen, you have to interview Scott Frost at halftime. Here are a list of things you're not allowed to ask. And it was like, don't ask about turnovers.
Injuries.
Don't ask about injuries. Don't ask about anything. A certain player. Don't ask about specific performances. I was like, what do you want me to ask him? Like, especially when we were down by like 21, right? And we turned the ball over 4 times in the first half. And I'm like, Scott, what'd you think of that first half? Right? It's just so dumb. It's like, dude, I want to ask a real question, but you have all these little handicaps that you can't do. Yeah. And then if you ask him something that you can't, like, he kind of looks at you and you're like, well, we're live, dude. Just freaking answer the question. Right?
I asked about turnovers. Would you not hear me? There were 6 of them. Go ahead, answer. No.
Yeah.
But hey, I'm glad you brought that up because there's so many times that I'm with people and they're like, the coach is running in at halftime and they're like, why would they ask him that stupid ass question? That's why, for everybody that wants to know, ask them the real question that we all want to know. Hey, are you going to pull that fucking quarterback and put the backup in or what? Like, we all want to know, right? We can't ask that. You got to be like, so defensively, they're putting up a fight. What do you think? Like, dude, it's so annoying sometimes. The questions are so vague and it's great. But all right, listen, nobody's getting away from this.
Manti Te'o thing?
I want to know more.
It really wasn't by the time I got there. So he got drafted in 2013's draft, correct?
12
because it was 12. It was 12. Right.
It was 13. I went to San Diego in 14, right? So the dust had kind of settled. The dust had kind of settled when that all got there. But my one Manti Te'o story is I was eating lunch with him. And we were talking, and we were just kind of hanging out. And
he's just looking to his left, talking to an empty seat, or what?
No, like, it was just the two of us. Like, we had gotten to lunch early. We were just kind of hanging out. And I was like, oh, what's up, man? How you doing? And like, it was very early when I was there. And I was like, oh, yeah. And we were chatting. He's like, yeah, I was just talking to my girlfriend. She lives over in Paris. And I had to take every ounce of my being to not go, really? Okay, that's cool, man. Yeah, he's like, yeah, she's lived over there for a while now. We met last year, and I was like, okay, well, you met. Okay, the second he said it to me, so many intrusive thoughts. Like, so many intrusive thoughts. He'd be like, I want to be like FaceTime or like pen pals or
actual sit down.
Yeah, this isn't like 1890 where you're writing letters, you know? Yeah.
But like, oh my god! Like, I don't know how you could keep it in. I wouldn't have kept it in.
Man, you're the rookie, right? You're kind of just hanging out, and like, all you wanted to do was say something the whole time. Every time you saw me, you just want to be like, "How? Can you explain to me how this happened?" But you can't, right? It's like taboo. Like, you can't touch it. But yeah, that was my one like Manti story. It was something.
Dude, it there's like something. I think it's Netflix, has a documentary. It's like a 2-hour thing telling this. It's him and his family telling the story. And it's his cousin who catfished him is part of the documentary, too. Like, everyone from all sides telling the story.
Wasn't it Harbaugh? It's
freaking wild.
Wasn't Harbaugh the head coach for Stanford? No, he was Notre Dame.
Notre Dame.
He was Notre Dame.
Yeah.
I was going to say, whoa, dude.
No, it was Notre Dame.
Was it Brian Kelly?
I think it was Brian Kelly. I just distinctly remember, God, I can't believe we're laughing about this. I distinctly remember, like, after the girlfriend had died in the car crash.
But she didn't die.
Like, nobody
died. After the game,
nobody died,
like,
dude.
Game ball, going to Manti, coming out here and playing after, like, all that had gone down, and just feeling like, man, how did that guy do that? And then just to find out what the bottom just fell out of this thing. Like, that was the golden era of Twitter, too.
That was.
Like, Twitter had just really gotten
and
going.
And Deadspin broke the story. And Deadspin had, like, some of the best writers in the freaking country.
Like, that was right when Twitter was, like, really rolling. And the reactions on Twitter were just unbelievable. But yeah, it's like weird to talk about because you're like, yeah.
It is weird because it's memes, kind of taboo, like you said.
The memes where it's like, it's just like a blank photo and it's John Cena hanging out with Manti Te'o's girlfriend. Can't see me.
Gosh, that was bad.
Oh, man.
God. All right. Hey, that's the end of part one here.
All right.
We're going to come back. Part two.
We're definitely getting canceled. Yeah, we're definitely
in so much trouble. Oh, man, please click that like button and the subscribe button on the O-Line Committee YouTube channel. Yeah, we're.
The headlines remind us daily the world is a dangerous place. The elites in charge say everything's fine. Stop noticing. But you know better. And your gut knows that time is short to prepare for a world that is 4 missed meals away from chaos. My Patriot Supply has helped over 3 million families become more self-reliant and is the company Americans trust to prepare. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com and secure their best-selling 3-month emergency food kits. Each contain delicious breakfasts, lunches, and dinners, averaging over 2,000 calories per day. Secure at least one food kit for each family member. For a limited time, save $200, plus get free shipping on all their Ready Hour 3-month emergency food kits. You're not ready if it's not Ready Hour Foods. My Patriot Supply also has solar power generators, water filtration units, biomass stoves, heirloom seeds, and critical survival gear. Shop MyPatriotSupply.com today. MyPatriotSupply.com.